You are listening to the fourth edition here of the Dreamcast on thedreamshake.com. Tom Martin here, along with co-host Christian Edelman. And Christian, you told me before this, last night's game against Oklahoma City, you were too disgusted to write a recap. Is this true?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. After the Chicago game, I was really disgusted because, well, I felt like Chicago got a little more help than they needed. And if if Rose is going to hit that many three-pointers, you can't do anything. But moving on to, you especially can't do anything if they scrub, you know, 5, 7, 9 points off the board. But that's a whole different topic. I'll let that one lie because otherwise, you know, I'll have dangerous blood pressure issues. Last night just looked like a tired, dispirited team to me. I mean, the Rockets tried, but the defense wasn't there. The rebounding wasn't there. Kyle Lowry is not in shape to play 40 minutes. That's pretty clear. And, you know, we by the end of the game, we were seeing Taylor. We were seeing all sorts of things that we never see. Jeffries, Taylor. I guess Adelman just figured, well, they've got fresh legs. Let's let them run around the court a little bit. But it seemed like Oklahoma City made an incredible number of long to medium range jumpers, which that's Durant's bread and butter. So that there's just not much you can do about that. But when you look at all the other players who made little medium range jumpers, and then all the offensive rebounds they got an incredible number of offensive rebounds. So please, Yao, come back soon, because there are times where you'd like to put a stop to that, and we just don't have the personnel, with the exception possibly of Hill, to put a stop to the other team destroying us on the offensive boards. And that's what they were doing with the amazing Kristic. So I don't know what you can do there.
Well, I mean, they got off to a great start. They put us in a hole early, and it looked like, you know, maybe for a bit we'd have a bit of a comeback there. We're down 3, I think, in the early second quarter, and then it just went haywire from there. I mean, those long twos, I wrote about it earlier. You know, the Rockets can say all they want about trying to force opponents into long twos, because they have in the past, but this year it doesn't seem like they're closing out as much. It seems like there's a lot more open shots as opposed to contested long twos. So that's a problem there. You know, I think it's going to be much easier once we just stop playing these top-tier teams, especially with a front court like Oklahoma City. You know, even with besides Kristic, Serge Ibaka had 22 points the night prior. He played pretty well. You know, so we can only hope. I guess I do want to get back to the Bulls game for 1 second, though, not to jump around. But like you said, when Derrick Rose goes 4 for 5 from behind the line, there's not much you can do about that. And, you know, there's it comes back to Kyle Lowry, because Lowry is suddenly with a starting role now, and that takes away from the bench. And without Chase Buttinger on the bench didn't do anything against Chicago. And
no, the bench was terrible. It was the worst outing I've seen from our bench against Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't much spunk from there. The personnel wasn't as good as it usually is.
I think Ishmael threw away 5 possessions in a row at one point. It was just frightening.
Something like that. And, you know, that when you have to play your starters for that much time, it carries over to Oklahoma City. And, you know, they just looked tired from the start, didn't they?
They did look – they looked tired. Oklahoma City jumped on us, like you said, and we never got back in it. We tried. I mean, I never fault the Rockets for a lack of effort, but you could see a bit of the dead legs there, and Oklahoma City was just running. They were hitting that long jumper, and then if they missed it, they were getting the rebound, and that just killed us. I'll jump around too, though, back to the Chicago game where I've looked at the clips, and I don't know that you take those points from Lowry off the board. I really don't. And then the referees missed some other calls where I think right at the end when we were almost catching up, I'm pretty sure Chicago had an 8-second backcourt violation, and they let them get away with it. And beyond that, they gave them the ball at midcourt, which I don't believe they should have done, because I don't think the timeout was called before the ball left midcourt. So either the timeout saved them, but it should have been thrown in not at midcourt because they had already advanced it, or it didn't save them and they had an 8-second violation. But instead, the referees gave them the best possible outcome, which was the ball at midcourt, as if they had advanced it.
I don't know about you. I mean, I thought up to Chicago's game, I thought the refs had been pretty good this year, aside from the whole technical fouls thing. I mean, have you noticed anything bad up until that game, perhaps?
Not really. I've noticed a lot more traveling calls, and traveling calls for guys starting drives where they're watching how they how their feet start, which is unusual, and it's not bad, but they've been calling that a lot more. They've been calling defensive 3 seconds a lot more this year, it seems to me. And those are fine with me. And I haven't found the technicals to be out of hand, really. I've seen a couple bad ones. There was the one on Martin where I don't really know that that warranted it, particularly when you get this sort of selective enforcement. That was the LA game where Odom was having a fit and Martin got a tee. But so the selective enforcement is also what I saw in that Chicago game, which is they called a charge on Lowry because he drove in and he kicked his leg out. Okay, that's technically the right call. But as I think someone, maybe it was Jonathan Fagan, pointed out that the that's basically what Karl Malone did on every drive for a million years. So now they're calling it on Lowry. So let's take the points away from that. They called another charge where Lowry went in. He didn't kick his leg out. The guy was clearly inside the half circle. How's that a charge? So I honestly think the referees pulled 9 points off the board in that Chicago game. And that just drives me insane. And that was the first game where also the Rockets got into the penalty in around 6 minutes or less in every other quarter in the Chicago game, except the fourth quarter where we never got in the penalty at all. So I don't know. I don't like to complain about the refs, but that game, something went weird in that game. And I don't know what it was.
Yeah. I mean, I hate talking about the refs too much either. I tried to hesitate from doing so, but you know, that's one of those games where you almost have to, cause it was such a prevalent part of the outcome. I do have to shift gears once more.
Right, okay. Because we all apologize for talking about the refs. Nothing could ever be bad about them, and we're bad people for doing it, and it just undermines the whole notion of basketball, and we're sorry and we repent, okay? Is that
– There we go. Good?
Yeah, all right.
Good enough from there. I noticed a few comments, and I like to read around every now and then, and I guess one thing that's brought in, and this is a very broad topic we're approaching here, is that – you know, the Rockets have always been championed as people of great analysis, and you know, we've always talked about efficiency on the blog, and I think a few of the commenters did point that out. And yet now that seems to be with the Rockets' poor record, people are starting to get a little antsy, and I've seen a few comments where they've said, well, if all these statistical things are in our favor, then how are we losing so many games? It must be the stats' fault. I'd like to combat that by saying that, for one, we've had a lot less in our favor, or we've had more stuff that's not in our favor than just the stats. And the stats are not really an entity. It's just based on what happens in the game, and it's an easier way of looking at the game. And I guess I can combat that by saying the other team has basically outstated us, if you will. You know, for as efficient as Kevin Martin can be and as efficient as anyone can be, really, other teams have had better efficiency. So I hope we don't attack the stats and attack the analysis in that format, because I think the Rockets, obviously, the front office realizes this. They're going to be, you know, I do see changes perhaps being made if this keeps up. I know that it's been the bad, you know, it's been the tough schedule. The injuries, of course. So I think it's way too early to be panicking by any means. But at the same time, this isn't a fault of the Rockets front office. It's simply some bad luck, a bad schedule, and things will look up. What are your thoughts, Christian? I'm curious. As you know, first of all, there was an article I think today from Pro Basketball Talk, kind of talking about the state of the Rockets. Where do you see us, you know, going from here? I guess with our no contract extension policy. What do you think the future is for this roster, maybe in the short term and the long term?
Well, okay, those are all interesting questions. I'll sort of try to tackle them one at a time.
You a load.
Yeah, no worries. As for the stats, you have to look at the stats as a way of seeing the world. One of the other hats I wear in my life is I'm a financial analyst, and so I spend my life looking at numbers and what's going on inside a company. But I know as well as anyone else that the numbers don't always tell the whole story. Yet, they will tell you a good part of the story, and they'll tell you where to look. And the important thing to remember about using the statistical analysis is none of this is over 8 games. This is over a season or two seasons or a college career. That is, the sample size is big when you're talking about this, when you're talking about statistical analysis. You have to, you know, imagine you're in a casino. You've just won 20 hands of blackjack in a row. That can happen, but odds are it's not going to keep happening. And that's what you're doing when you're working with the stats. You're saying the odds are this team with these statistical packages is going to win this many games. That's what we've seen in the past. That's what our observation tells us. But it is a, it is, the NBA season is a crucible. It is a lab. It is a real world test where sometimes the territory and the map don't agree with each other, and you have to believe the territory. Right now, the territory is telling us that our team construction has a flaw or our execution has a flaw. But is that a flaw that's long-term or is it short-term? We're just now a bit over the 10% mark in the season. So we've got 90% of the season left to correct things, to get it right, to start winning games, and to get back off our heels, and maybe to get some injured guys back. Because, our, you know, right now still, the most money on the Rockets roster is Yao Ming, and Yao Ming isn't playing. And that is always going to make a difference. So that's what I see about the stats, which is stay the course, and I think... The next part, we're talking about, you know, roster changes now and in the future. Well, I think that the Rockets are going to see if their analysis of the sort of team we built matches the territory being our record in the NBA. And if it doesn't, I think they're going to make changes. I think that maybe we need to have players who are perhaps not as gifted in any one area, but gifted in several areas to bring on the court. I thought that's what we were getting, for instance, with Courtney Lee, a player who had some good scoring ability, some good defensive ability, could handle the ball, could pass a little, and maybe that's the sort of guy who's useful. I thought this team had been built with an answer for almost everything, whereas it seems like right now we have an answer for almost nothing, and that's certainly not what I expected, but... We still have to see more games, and the changes we can make. Well, most of the changes people talk about involve bringing in high-volume shooters who score a lot. That's really not the problem. So, you know, I don't see anybody suggesting a trade for a defensive whiz, with the exception of perhaps Tayshaun Prince, who I'll note, when you look at his advanced stats, actually still contributes more offensively than he does defensively. But that said, I'll move on to the last thing, which is the no extensions policy. I don't view that as a bad thing. I'm glad that teams do that, and sometimes there's a compelling reason if you've got a Kevin Durant, where you say, I never want this guy to become unhappy. I want to lock him up, and if I have to pay more now to pay a little bit less later and for him never to hit the market, I'll do it. But that said, what we're talking about is a contractual business arrangement, and to say, well, we like you so much, we're going to tear up what we're paying you this year and pay you more now and pay you more in the future. Well, very few businesses do that as a matter of course. When it comes time to renegotiate a deal, the deal is renegotiated. And we saw that happen this summer with Lowry and with Scola. And Lowry found a nice offer, and the Rockets instantly matched it. Scola got a good deal, a deal that he's happy with. And you can't say he hasn't, you know, performed his side of the deal so far this season. He's putting up great numbers. So in terms of what we're looking at, remember, the Rockets have a lot of draft picks. They have some valuable assets to trade. So this Rocket... roster may look different next year or in the future. And you wonder, what's the sort of, is there a kind of player that we need on this team rather than an individual? And that's a question I'll put to you. Do you see us needing a certain sort of player on the court right now that we're lacking? And if so, what is it?
Well, I do think that the one stat that Jonathan Fagan pointed out earlier is the number of times the Rockets have led in the fourth quarter and have let that get away. And I know that in supporting, you know, perhaps not going after Carmelo Anthony, I stated that, you know, it's a small portion of the game where you need to have those important shots made, and that you have to look at the whole game. But looking at it more now, it seems that we, you know, the Rockets have, you know, been pretty decent throughout the course of the game, but the pitfall for a ton of those losses so far has been the end of the game. And so now you have to wonder if you need to go out and get someone who can really create their own shot, perhaps not a volume shooter, although, you know, there aren't many shot creators that aren't volume shooters, but at the same time...
Kevin Martin.
Well, okay, but Kevin Martin doesn't really create in the fourth quarter.
No, he's much more like Rip Hamilton. He's got he needs to be run off three screens or something. I think if you ran the same play set for him that you run for Kyle Korver... you know, he'd do very well. But he also can create off the dribble a lot better than someone like Korver or even Hamilton. So that is, there is something to be said for him. But I agree with you. Sorry to interrupt.
Well, no problem. But I, you know, I agree with that. But at the same time, it's always been my observation that, what Kevin Martin does really well is in creating off the dribble is finding a crease where maybe an opponent might have not made a 100% effort to close off. And he's very good at recognizing open opportunities and then going to the hole and drawing a foul. Late in games, drawing fouls becomes much more difficult. It's also tougher to find any creases in a defense. Defense locks up more when you have a game on the line in the fourth quarter. And we've seen that from him. Like I said in the recap the other day, Kevin Martin reacts to the defense much more than he forces the defense to react to him. And I think we need somebody who can we need someone who can create outside of that. I'm not sure who that is at this point, but that's the player I think we might need to go out and get eventually, unless we think Aaron Brooks is that guy. It's always been interesting watching Brooks at the end of games because he can obviously buy defenders, but it's what happens after he gets by that first defender, that first point guard, that you're never really sure what he's going to do. If he passes it out, it could create a good opportunity, but usually Brooks tries to do it himself. He's not great at finishing in the lane just pretty much because of his size. He's great for his size at finishing, but compared to other players, it's more much more of a crapshoot. And so while I think Brooks is capable of that, he still can't create his own scoring like other guys can, namely Derrick Rose, when we saw it firsthand. So, you know, I think that's a big concern for the Rockets. You know, once they have everyone in place and healthy, and if it's still a concern, then you have to address it. And that means that I must have been completely wrong in assuming that that those crucial moments don't require crucial players, because if this keeps up, it has been proven to me that it must. So, you know, I'm throwing around different things here. What are some other thoughts you might have, if any?
Well, one of my thoughts is I think you're right, but, you know, of course, you look at last season and take a player that I think it's no secret is not my favorite player in the NBA, Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant had an excellent record last year shooting last-second shots to win or tie games. But over his career, he hasn't. Over his career, he's been below average. But the perception is he's your closer. He's your guy who nails people. He's your guy who shuts them down. And last year he was. But over his career, he hasn't been. Now, the guy...
Well, to interrupt for one second.
Sure.
Yeah, a quick question for you. Do you think if you have a closer like Kobe Bryant, is there any chance that... Because I think in a lot of cases, like you said, Kobe hasn't shot well in those last minutes. I think maybe because he's been forcing it, because he is labeled as the closer. Do you think anyone out there is capable of closing games while at the same time, if something isn't there for the said closer, can they create other opportunities for other players? I guess my question is, you know, who do you think is the best closer out there, or an ideal closer, if not Kobe Bryant? Because I know Melo's made a lot of shots in the clutch before, you know.
Melo's pretty good at that, and I had my eyes open to him in some ways by an article on Round Ball Mining Company, I think it was, where they analyzed him not only in sort of clutch situations, but how he did shooting contested jumpers.
I did see that.
The interesting thing is that Melo was one of the – was either the best or in the top three in the NBA in shooting contested shots, and that's – if you want to talk sort of closing ability, that's what it's got to be, which is there's a hand in your face and you make it anyway, or there's two guys on you and you make it anyway, or you shoot about the same way you shoot anyway, which is pretty amazing when you consider, you know, the contest on the shot, the defense on the shot. So, you know, he's out there, but how many players are out there that really qualify? I don't know, not that many. And most of them are superstars and they're locked up. You know, guys that you want to go to in the final minutes of a game, you know, a Tim Duncan. Well, you know, Tim Duncan's going to, you know, live and die a Spur. You're never going to see him. You're never going to probably see Dirk Nowitzki. In terms of guys who will pass out of that situation, they're few and far between, because I'm not sure the mentality of the guy who's going to take over in the last part of the game is the same. I guess Steve Nash or Chris Paul are probably the two that I would say, and Deron Williams are the maybe the three guys who actually have that sort of closer ability but also will be looking for their teammates if they have a better option to score the ball. But so that, so what does that tell you? It tells you you need a top three point guard. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, do you think Aaron Brooks can be that guy?
I haven't seen the passing ability to make him that guy, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I think we should probably get on to our guest portion before we just start to lose our heads here.
Sure.
Yeah, but we have a game coming up Friday against Toronto, so our guest, very special guest, will be on after this. Stay tuned for his thoughts. Now, Christian, last week I was not available to interview and talk to Kevin Pelton. Of course, I think you took care of that wonderfully. But this week, I am very excited to announce our guest. He is a co-founder of the Basketball Jones podcast, which has since moved to thescore.com. He and his co-founder and co-host, Jay Skeets, always do a great job. Tass Mellis, thanks for coming on. How are you today?
Guys, thank you for having me on. I'm very happy to be here, actually.
Well, good. I guess now you've been at the school recently. I think that's gone fantastic. You have your own studio, obviously, now. And I guess my first question is to tell us maybe a bit about that project for, you know, listeners who may not be as clued in, and kind of the direction of where the school might be headed with you guys.
Okay. Well, I'll start it quickly from the genesis, which was a bar. After university was done, about, you know, almost 5 years ago now, we just sort of sat around and weren't really enjoying our day jobs. Our background is in radio and television at school, where we, you know, we produced our own type of our own projects. And Jason Doyle, JD, our producer, and I, as well as Skeet, sat down and we said, "Hey, like, we want to continue producing things." And that's when JD introduced us to what a podcast was. And we said, "Like, what do we know about? Oh yeah, basketball. Let's talk about that." And it's just sort of steamrolled from there. So we started an audio podcast once a week, came daily, like Monday through Friday, trying to, you know, get it up while people were commuting into and out of work. And then we turned the video, and then, you know, we developed a relationship with the Score where they like our sort of viral videos and our daily show and what we were doing. So they brought us on, and the Score as an entity here is definitely looking forward to the digital realm. That's why they brought us on. They're big on their mobile device, obviously, web as well, in terms of just producing content and just, you know, pumping it out, getting it out there, getting it out to the social streams. And, they basically brought us on to continue doing what we're doing. I think a big worry for us and anybody who is sort of sitting there and not making money, the prospect of making money with the Score was and is, you know, huge. But, you know, we really pride ourselves on our brand and maintaining that sort of independent feel. And they allow us to do that. And, you know, that was definitely a big worry coming in. And they just basically, you know, we've got our own office, which is fantastic. And they just sort of leave us alone and let us get the creative juices flowing and doing what we're doing. And they just take on all the content. I mean, there's not an editorial process, really. We're our own editors. So it's pretty phenomenal. It's basically, you know, to continue doing what we're doing, they really get it. You know, they haven't messed with the program at all. So they've just been, you know, just made it a lot easier for us, basically.
Well, it sounds like a comfortable setup. I guess my question to you is do you see yourselves, you and J.E. and Jason and Matt Austin, ever really, I guess, crossing more into the journalistic aspect of this, or do you want to remain kind of the commentary type in the blogosphere? How do you envision that working out?
Do you mean like sort of the credential be in the arena type deal?
As in something, you know, because obviously you've upgraded stuff, you have your own studio now. I mean, would you original reporting perhaps, or are you staying more on the blog side, I guess? Because I feel like you're more bloggers, of course, I think, in my opinion, the best bloggers out there, but more bloggers than journalists. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we don't do investigative reporting whatsoever. I mean, we've moved to television. Basically, our show, sort of our daily web show, has moved to television. As a 22-minute show with, you know, more production elements in that sort of ideal. Again, like you mentioned, it's sort of higher quality. But yeah, we sort of stay away from, the reports and the interviews. And when we do get a chance to interview a player, it's less about the game and more about, you know, bringing the personality out of a player, or what people typically say is, you know, we don't want that prototypical, I gave it my all, my 110%, my four quarter effort or 42 minute effort, as Zach Randolph would say. I mean, that's us. We want people get attached to us because they get attached to our personalities, as opposed to looking to us for they do look to us for our insights, but it is more of that sort of barroom feel. So, I mean, the score is, it isn't a typical sort of sports media network. It's personality driven, a lot more commentary, a lot more, not so much your typical like game recaps, but more of just like the, hey, let's talk about things type ideal. So that's where we fit in. And yeah, I don't ever see us going, you know, and being those sort of beat guys or, the more serious type feel, because, I mean, that takes away from what we are. It takes away from what they want, what the score wants from us. It takes away from what we want from ourselves. So that won't change. I don't see that happening at all.
Well, I agree with you. I think you guys have built a really good following with, you know, kind of the niche you have in the community. And I think that I'd be ashamed to deter from that. So good to hear. I guess our two respective teams, you're obviously a Raptors fan, are meeting this Friday. And, two players who may not be the focal point of the matchup, but bring up some interest in Rockets fans. Of course, Joey Dorsey and Dave Anderson both played in Houston last year. I can't think of really a, direct question to ask other than maybe to just describe how they fit in so far. You know, do they hang out ever? What's their role with the Raptors this far?
I mean, Joey Dorsey has recently gotten minutes, much to the delight of a lot of Raptors fans. The hardcore Raptors fans are happy to see Mini Dwight on the floor. I don't know if you guys called him that at all, but it's sort of a nickname that's kind of picking up here.
He's certainly close to as strong.
Sorry, what was that?
I say certainly close to as strong as Dwight is.
Yeah, apparently. He claims that he can bench, you know, just a little bit less than Dwight, and will surpass him or meet him very soon at 315 on the bench. We got a lot of attitude, and if Reggie Evans wasn't in front of him in Toronto, I think you might see more of him because he's obviously that type of guy. He's sort of filled in. I think he could become a crowd favorite if he ever got serious minutes, but at this point, I mean, he's very much a bit player, and even though Toronto's front line is pretty thin, I see it hard for him to fit in there, you know, especially as guys like Ed Davis develop, and Reggie Evans is here for this final year, so I'm not, and Amir Johnson, so I'm not sure how much time he's going to get. Really, other than that, bit of a feel-good story, but that's it. As for David Anderson, bit of a pleasant surprise. I think people weren't extremely high on him coming over. While he's healthy, he was healthy and going, very pleasing. He fit in very well. He hit the occasional three ball, which was, a bit of a surprise to Raps fans. We all knew he could shoot, but he did play, feels like to me, since, watching with the Rockets last year and watching with the Aussie team, he played a little bit harder, I found, these first 10 games. A little bit more physical, I guess is a better word. So Raps fans like him. I mean, he's, again, a guy that could easily be taken out of the rotation at any time, I feel like, because, as soon as they find somebody a little more talented, a little bit more, wide-ranging skill set, he'd be gone. So, again, guys or fans like that, these both of those players, because they work their asses off, and it's a different flavor. It's a different feeling for Rats fans to be watching guys that really work their asses off. So it's been, they've both been pleasant early season surprises.
Well, it's interesting that I think one word that we would hardly use to describe Dave back in Houston would be physical, but good to hear about him. And yeah, obviously has always had a great shot. His turnaround jumper in the paint has always been just automatic. I guess looking more at the Raptors team and how they've done so far this year, I noticed they really haven't been too good in offensive or defensive efficiency. They've turned the ball over a lot. Not to be too critical, but what positives do you see in this team? And I guess what X factors really present themselves in order for them to win?
Tom, you're not being critical at all. That's you hit it on the head. I mean, they haven't been good at very much at anything, really. I mean, there have been some short flashes. This team does not have an identity. So, what do they hang their hat on every night? Man, it beats me. Last year, Jay Triano had this offense clicking so well, and I'm not going to just lay the blame on Chris Bosh's absence for that going out the window. It's the fact that no one is consistent. The whole turning the ball over, it's painful to watch. You know, we got a point guard like Jose Calderon that, known for not turning it over, but he started the season off very, very rocky. He's had a couple of good games recently, but, Jared Jack has not been consistent, so you guys really don't have to worry about an Oklahoma City point guard or a Chicago Bulls point guard running you over Friday night. I think that'll be huge for the Rockets. Kyle Lowry can maybe settle down a little bit. He won't have to deal with either anybody causing him any problems. Where can they improve? Jeez, I mean, like you said, they can't turn the ball over. It's painful to watch. I think guys just have to be more assertive on offense, whether it's Sonny, DeMar, Kleiza when he's healthy, and Bargnani, which is the constant question with him. It's consistent effort. And it's unfortunate to say, it sounds like a broken record. If we played this, or if you asked me this question in 07 and 08 and 09, I would probably be giving you the same answers. Okay, 07, we won the division. Everything worked out there. But yeah, the last couple of years, I mean, that's exactly what it's been. Defense with Jay Triano. Triano has turned up the swearing this year. He is trying to bring out the ferocity a little bit to get under guys' skin. He's swearing at every possible moment, seems like every interview. He's an angry man, and it's still not rubbing off on him. The Raps go into Orlando and win and look phenomenal, and then they go lay an egg in Washington, and it's a little tough to watch at times in terms of effort, because I'm sorry to really, really grasping at an answer for you, but they're talented offensively. It's those nights. I mean, they don't walk out onto the floor with any pep in their step. They're just flat-footed, and they allow guys to run over them. And before you know it, they're down 10, 12, 14, and they don't know how to come back. They don't know how to get energized. It's either they have it from walking out of the tunnel, which occasionally happens, the rare occasion, but it's not there. Triano doesn't have a hold of these guys. There's no fire within them, unfortunately.
Okay, hi, this is Christian Edelman, also of the Dream Shake. I want to ask you a question, sort of speaking of the same thing. As an outside observer, we're seeing a lot of the same things you're talking about, maybe about the Raptors, with the Rockets right now, given their record. As an outside observer, are you seeing anything on the Rockets that would give you cause for optimism? Because right now, the Rockets and the Raptors, record-wise, look pretty similar.
Yeah, I mean, the difference is, to me, the strength of schedule with the Rockets. They had that tough start in terms of the difficulty of the teams that they're playing. They started with the back-to-back. They lose both those games there. And, unlike the Raptors, the major injuries the Rockets are dealing with. Put Yao aside for a second, because I think front office knew that coming into the season, that this could very well happen. and you know, they shorted up with Brad Miller and trying to get Eric Dampier there. Aaron Brooks is monstrous for them. I know all of Houston is angry with Kyle Lowry right now. I think the difference is, you know, it's sort of like there's two parts to Houston's season so far for me anyways. It's, you know, the strength schedule, that tough start, and then, you know, it seemed like they were just losing by, you know, these close margins, and they're, you can see that they're a good team, and they have these incredible role definitions from Rick Adelman. And I loved even watching their losses, to be honest. And I guess the similarity is in those losses between the Raptors and the Rockets is that fourth quarter meltdown. The Raptors have had a couple, and the Rockets just don't have a guy. It seems like it's the same old news for the Houston Rockets as well. It's like they just don't have a guy to go to at the end of games. You know, Kmart is the guy to make open shots, but he's not the guy to create and get a shot. And Aaron Brooks, you know, has been that guy this year when he has been healthy. They rely on him to do that, and I believe he won him one game by doing that. But the second part of the Rockets season was, it just seems like the Rockets have really great offensive players, but they're really horrible at defense. So they've got really great defensive players, Jordan Hill, Shane Battier, but they're very bad on defense, you know, or on offense, I should say. So, you know, I think they have some holes in their lineup, but with these injuries, it's impossible to overcome with a tough schedule on the West. And you know, I thought they handled the beginning of the season so well, even with these new faces, these new players, full season of Kevin Martin, with that tough schedule to start. You know, I felt bad for them. I thought they were going to pick it up, and then these injuries. It's a little too much to overcome. But you're playing the Raptors tomorrow night for Friday night. I think things will be fine.
Well, I'm not so sure, because is there any advice you could offer our Rockets players on avoiding the pitfalls of White Vegas while they're there? Because they do need to concentrate.
No, not really. I think White Vegas has been very much overhyped. I think the Thursday night life will be fine for them. I think there isn't much going on. Friday night, I mean, after the game, there will be plenty of options. The city, not putting down the city whatsoever. The weekend nightlife is fantastic, so they'll do just fine. But I mean, I can take care of them tonight. If there is a problem, we can just sit back and have some wine and crackers. If a more low key night, if they have my number, we can make it happen.
Yeah, we're going to arrange that, because I think it would be good. You know, when I went to Toronto, I remember enjoying the food, but I don't remember it just being, you know, insane. You know, I thought it was nice, and it had a lot of interesting clubs and bars and restaurants. But it seemed like it was perfectly possible to stay out of trouble. But right now, every little bit helps with the Rockets. So, you know, I think we'll try to hook the Rockets up with you if you could take them out, maybe to a Bible study tonight, if that would be possible.
We can surely make that happen. I would like Jason Whitlock to come up here and show me what options he's talking about, because I'm pretty sure that he hasn't lived through all those suggestions that he's made. Because if they're out there, I mean, I really don't have any idea what he's talking about.
Yeah, I really thought that was more of sort of Montreal's department, but you know, I don't know for sure. But
you are very correct. Your knowledge of our fine country is bang on. Montreal and Niagara Falls, which isn't a hub of activity, but that type of bar that Whitlock was referring to, the old nudies, yeah, that Niagara Falls and Montreal rule the country, that's for sure.
Well, one last question in a similar vein, which is, my child's fifth birthday is coming up, and I'm looking for a Hato Turkoglu and, you know, impersonator to come and dance and perform there, and I wondered if you would know how to arrange that, because it's harder in Houston than you might think to find it. So I thought I might have to go beyond international borders. Do you have any advice in that department? Or
we can get a three-way call right after this. We can get your credit card out for a one-way ticket, and I'll be there. We will make it happen.
That sounds excellent. It's a good time of year to visit Houston. It's quite pleasant, and you know, it's odd for a 5-year-old to be a Hato Turkoglu fan, but there you have it.
Also, there may be a Hato Turkoglu experience going on in Los Angeles. He might make an appearance at the All-Star Game in February. That's the rumor, actually. I kid, obviously, Hito's not going to get anywhere close to Los Angeles unless he goes there on his own accord. But as you guys know, the NBA ballot, the All-Star ballots came out today, and there's a rumor movement actually sort of happening. You know how every year there's let's get Antoine Walker on the All-Star at the All-Star game, and there's a Hito Turtoglu sort of movement that's happening very slowly here. So who knows? You might be able to just head over to Los Angeles there, and instead of me flying down, you can get the real one.
Well, that sounds good. We'll do what we can to get China behind it, because if we can do that, we can make it happen.
Oh, yeah. You guys know that for sure. Definitely.
Oh, yeah. Heard it here first, listeners. Hito, maybe not the real one, but the best one making an appearance in L.A. Tass, as for Friday night, a prediction, perhaps? Who do you think's going to win?
I think the Rocks have a little bit more, a little bit more in their system, a little more juice. I don't trust the Raptors coming off a win. They beat the Sixers. I think they get a little fat after wins in general. Coming home after that four-game trip, their first game back, I like the Rockets to take the Raptors, even if it is on the road.
We hope so, too. And, thanks for coming on. We wish you best of luck tomorrow night and with the score in the future.
Yeah, thanks again.
Yes, thank you very much, guys. Anytime, I'm definitely willing to come back, willing to talk to guys who obviously know their ball. So thanks.
Awesome. Thank you. Stay tuned, listeners. We'll come right back, me and Christian. That was Tass Mellis. He and Kevin Pelton, I don't know if we'll be able to top those two as guests. They're both very good at what they do.
Do you think it's because they feel sorry for us as Rocket fans right now, Tom, that we're getting these great guests on our podcast, that they just feel like, the poor Rockets, it's the least I can do?
They might be, and this might be the time where we go and reach out to Michael Jordan and guys like that.
Yeah, so, I think we could get Barkley on the podcast. I think we could.
I would love Barkley. I love controversy because that brings hits, and we need traffic.
Yeah, so, Barkley could slag off on the Rockets and their management for an hour or so. That would be great.
So. You don't want to hear my Barkley impression. It's bad. So we'll leave it at that. I've tried.
I have a Barkley golf swing that I can impersonate.
Now that I have that down pat, I made sure and watched old Hank Haney try and teach him, and it just didn't get any better. I have the whole stop where you really kind of hold yourself in the most awkward position, but always a pleasure to watch or not. Now, I guess we do usually spend this portion talking about the general NBA stuff, and I guess one thing that Rockets fans should be keeping up with, though, to combat that is the New York Knicks and how they will be performing this year, because lo and behold, all those assets we talk about, perhaps the most important if the Knicks do not do very well are those draft picks that we have. Right now they're 3-8. They finally won a game after a 6-game losing streak. We haven't seen, I'd say, the final product, much like the Rockets. I think they will get better. At the same time, though, Christian, what do you see with the Knicks so far? I mean, Amari Stoudemire has been good on some nights, very bad on others. If you really key into them, they haven't been playing defense. What do you see with this team?
Well, I think the Knicks are, correct me, where we get to swap that pick. That pick is protected through, is it protected through 5?
I think we get the 2011 pick, don't we? And then don't we swap 2012, or is it the other way around?
Right, well, I think we swap in 12. I think we get the pick, but it's pardon me.
Top 5 protected. Mm-hmm. I think the first one's top 5, and the second one is top 1, unless it's reversed.
Right.
We don't have Stat Boy on board with us, but right. Something like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, we really don't want to be in a position where we're trading New York, our number 3 pick for their number 6.
Don't go there.
you know, my thought is, you know, geez, Rockets, if we're going to be in a situation where it looks like we're going to be deep in the lottery, which is, you know, our, if you project our record over the season right now, where we would be, you know, I would have rather done it last year where we could have gotten DeMarcus Cousins. But that said, okay, I think the Knicks are, you know, I'm really hoping for that number six pick. And I think we could get it. I think that's a really reasonable possibility for where the Knicks finish with their record. I don't think they're the worst team. They've got some real offensive firepower on that squad. They really do. I'm a little surprised that Raymond Felton isn't better as a point guard. I thought he was kind of an up and coming star, and so far he's been a bit of a disappointment for the Knicks. But Gallinari's a good scorer. Amari's a fantastic scorer. But my gosh. That is, you think the Rockets are a soft defense? Holy cow! And in the game we played them, where they put Wilson Chandler in at power forward, unbelievable. I guess the idea was he was going to go out and shoot threes and make Scola's night miserable because Scola can't run out on those stretch forwards and spacing forwards rather, and that didn't really happen. Scola just abused him. So I don't know. I'm wondering a little bit about D'Antoni's system and if it doesn't produce a kind of roster that can really be troublesome unless you have superstars in the right spot, which is to say, okay, you've got Amari. Well, where's Steve Nash? Where's the guy who can make that pick and roll just devastating? Because the pick and roll for New York with Amari is what should kill you, and it just isn't. It's sort of Amari freelancing around and getting the ball way, you know, up on the high post or pretty far away from the block and then driving and dribbling in or shooting his jumper, which is a good jumper for a big man, but it should be a wide open jumper and nobody has to respect it. They can just come out on him because they know nothing else is going to happen, and they certainly are not going to get a pass to Mozgov in the middle. I watched the Rockets game and the guy cut down the lane pretty much wide open at least five times, and the ball came nowhere near him. It was either in Amari's hands or it was in Felton's hands, and Felton was just pounding around the outside, and the guy kept, you know, cutting through the lane and nothing. So the Knicks are a real good chance at being a number six pick, to make a long story long.
Well, you know, yeah, we're running kind of short on time here, but just to add to that, you know, like you said, Felton, it's funny because his numbers look kind of good, but when you actually watch him play, either it might have been Seth Rosenthal from Posting and Toasting or somebody else pointed this out, is that Felton misses a lot of and much could happen on offense but doesn't because of Felton's lack of awareness perhaps. You know, we saw Danilo Gallinari not playing much defense, kind of lazy at times. One of the players that has been good, and this is very encouraging because we want this kind of player to be the best player, because then this team might not be so good, is Landry Fields. Landry Fields has been very good for them, but when you say Landry Fields is your best player at this point in time, maybe besides Amare, that's awesome. I want to hear that. I want to hear more of that.
Well, I completely agree about Landry Fields, and if your best players are Landry Fields, Amare, and Wilson Chandler, you're in a good situation. I think it seems to be fairly easy to find useful shooting guards. We've seen Landry Fields appear very late in the draft or in the second round, and Wes Matthews, who's playing very well for Portland, and Brandon Roy's absence. So, Rockets, find us a guy like that.
Well, we're trying to make Ish that guy, but we'll see. You know, we're usually us and the Spurs and maybe guys like Portland, or teams like Portland, should I say, are very good at finding diamonds in the rough. So hopefully it continues to pan out. That's all the time we have today, folks. Thanks for listening in. I'd like to thank Tass Mellis once again for coming on. Best of luck to us tomorrow, Christian, tomorrow night against Toronto. And that's it for the Dreamcast. Tune in next time. Thanks.